Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour, and they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com, TRUGREEN.com, to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Hey, this is John Zadak, TV voice of the Cincinnati Reds, and you're up for Late Night Reds Talk.
Hello, everybody. My name is Tim Daniel, and welcome to Late Night Reds Talk Live, the live show and podcast that loves the Cincinnati Reds, part of the Believe Podcast Network, and presented, as always, by Bet Online. This show is live streamed on YouTube, Twitter, and Facebook, and the podcast version is always up the next morning. I'm joined tonight by Nick Kirby and special guest Matt Wilkes. If you're watching tonight on YouTube, please take 2 seconds to hit the like button and subscribe to our channel. It really helps to continue our show to grow our show. Before we get started and get into everything that happened tonight and our guest, let's have Nick come on and tell you guys real quick about our good friends and our partners at Bet Online.
Bet Online is the number one spot for all of your sports betting needs. It's the fastest and easiest way to wager on all your sports contests and events with first of market odds and lines. Find reviews and news for every league, including Major League Baseball, NFL, NBA, NHL, combat sports, esports, and even golf. BetOnline continues to be the top online resource for all your sports information, from live in-game betting, props, and futures. Head to BetOnline today or use your mobile device to join and make your first sports bet. Use our promo code BELIEVE50. That is BLEAV50. Again, BLEAV50 to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet online is where the game starts.
Awesome. Thank you for that, Nick. Appreciate it. Let's go ahead and bring in our guest. He is the co-creator of Reds Content Plus. This is his second time joining us. And two times is not enough. If you follow him, he's got a lot of great insight to the Reds and everything going on with the organization. Our good friend, Mr. Matt Wilkes. And Matt, we're glad to have you on. We just apologize. It had to be a night that Alejo Lopez was DHing.
Well, when you're down to what the Reds roster currently is, you got to roll with it. I did enjoy the brilliant start by TJ Zoik tonight, though.
TJ Zoik, man. 2/3, 4 walks. No K's? I mean, come on. You know? That's pretty hard to do.
That is ace caliber stuff right there.
Yeah. Man. Whew. Poor TJ Zoik. What a season. Poor guy.
Yeah, I feel bad for him. Oh, man.
Yeah. Just kind of going out there and just throwing things and seeing what sticks. And apparently it sticks to bats. So that's how that goes. Overall, you know, tonight's game, not, you know, they kept it interesting. You saw some cool defensive plays from Aquino again and Senzel, you know, at second base of all places. But you saw Jonathan India leave, which looks like with another injury. You know, you saw Chucky Robinson get a hit in his first major league game. That's pretty cool. And the bullpen pitched pretty well. But, you know, it's another loss. They're 48-74 now. So, you know. Rough night at the ballpark for the Reds once again. Donovan Solano playing first base, so that was cool, like you said, with what's left of the roster.
It was something.
Yeah.
I don't know what else to add on Solano. You're down to a guy who's never even played first base before. It's slim pickings.
Not too fun right now, being a fan of the Reds by any means. I kind of though bring this back to out of tonight because but this is obviously, the craziest, most insane, frustrating year probably for Reds fans with all the moves that were made. But kind of building towards the future for you and your outside look at this franchise and this organization. What would kind of be your overall thoughts on where the team is and what to kind of expect from the future of the team?
Yeah, I mean, where the team is obviously not great. It's a bummer to see that it was kind of torn down over the last year. Obviously they were competitive. This time last year, they were still in the hunt for a wild card. Kind of a completely different team at this point. I think me, like many people, I wasn't too happy with any of the moves leading up to the season. But now that we're here, I think, Luis Castillo, Tyler Mahle, Brandon Drury, trading them was the right move given where they're at. It's a shame it had to come to that point, but I think, they need to go in all in on the rebuild at this point. And they've done that. I think, there's definitely some excitement building in the minor leagues. This is the best farm system I can ever remember, at least, since back in 2008-ish when Jay Bruce and Joey Votto were coming up. So that's exciting. They have a nice core to hopefully build from and hopefully build a contender in a few years. I think I still need to see Nick Kroll's ability to build a major league roster and fill in those holes. Not every prospect's going to work out. You can't bank on every single prospect working out. It's not reality, but they do have a lot of exciting talent to build from. And hopefully Nick Kroll can pull some strings in the next few years and fill in those holes that need to be filled in the roster. And in 2024, 2025, hopefully we'll be looking at another contender. But it's brutal to watch right now. It's probably going to be brutal at times next year too, although hopefully we'll start to see some of those prospects come through and, have more of a reason to tune in. I think that's kind of why a lot of us are watching now, other than, we're just gluttons for punishment. But, watching guys like Lodolo, you kind of get to watch a glimpse of the future. Kind of stinks it had to come so close to the last rebuild. I feel like I was just saying this about, Robert Stevenson, but it is what it is. So just kind of gotta embrace it and root for the prospects at this point.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you look here, if you're watching along with us on YouTube, thanks for tuning in. The Reds have the number 4 farm system according to MLB Pipeline. Baseball America, they're number 5. And as of the August 8th update, the Reds have 5 top 100 prospects. I think it's kind of hilarious that Nick Lodolo still lists as a prospect considering he's been on the big league roster all year, but that's not for me to say. And then you look at a guy like Brandon Williamson, who's just like right outside. He's the number 6 prospect on the Red system, according to the Pipeline. So Nick, we'll bring you into the conversation here because I know you are a recent subscriber of MILB TV and have been doing your due diligence of seeing what's going on in the farm system there. I know we've touched on this for quite a few weeks now since the trades, but seeing what's kind of how things are developing, seeing how they're ranked right now, including today with this news coming out, how are you feeling now? Are you feeling it's progressed more in excitement for the future of this organization with what they have? Or,
well, the Chattanooga Lookouts have been rained out the last two nights, so that's been the worst part of my week. That team's a lot of fun to watch right now. Any way you shape it, the Reds aren't going to do anything without a good farm system. Where they're spending, even if they're spending quite a bit more than they're at now, they have to have a good farm system. They have to consistently have a good farm system to have any success. So, like Matt said, look, there's a whole nother part of this, but I think this is the important first step. And, I do think there's some merit to, going this route giving a better chance of sustained success as opposed to, you know, a 2020 1 year run. And then, you know, yeah, they could have probably done a lot more last year to make that team, you know, have a better shot of making the playoffs. But they also had a lot of things really go right that probably we didn't expect. So it's kind of a little bit of both. But yeah, I mean, the farm system is as exciting as I can ever remember. You know, I wasn't nearly as big of a Reds fan back in 2007, 2008. I was away in college and, you know, there wasn't nearly the kind of access that we have now. So, I mean, it's exciting, you know, in that regard. And I have no idea really what to expect next year. I can see it going a lot of different ways. But I definitely think when we start getting into 2024, I think the Reds have a really good chance to really build a really, really good team that can compete for years to come.
Yeah, yeah, I definitely agree. Matt, you know, with all this, you know, influx of talent coming to the farm system, obviously, you know, everyone's excited about Ellie De La Cruz and what we've been able to see from him hitting, you know, 490-foot homers has been pretty awesome. Who are some of the guys that really excite you that you're kind of seeing coming through the system right now?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard not to start with Ellie De La Cruz. I mean, numbers he's putting up are ridiculous. The dude is just a physical specimen. Yeah, he can do everything on the field. He can run, he can hit, he can throw. Maybe he's to improve his defense a little bit, but that's nitpicking. I mean, he has a chance to be a superstar. I mean, the rub on him is still going to be, you know, pitch selection, strikeouts. And frankly, I thought Double A was going to be a pretty big test for him, and he's just continue doing exactly what he was doing in Dayton. So you kind of keep thinking something's going to give with the strikeouts and the low-ish walk rate. His walk rate's not terrible. And it just doesn't. I mean, the dude's his bat speed is unreal. He can get to anything in the strike zone. He's going to crush it. So I don't know. Maybe something will give eventually, but he's really exciting. You know, Noelvi Marte excites me a lot too. And it's hard not to see Manny Machado when you see that swing. He's got some pop and, you know, he's probably moving to third base long-term. But I think he's got the bat to play at third base. So I'm excited to see where he ends up. You know, someone closer to the big league, Spencer Steer is putting up huge numbers in Louisville right now. Frankly, should be on the big league team right now. And probably slide Kyle Farmer over to first base. Moose can go to the bench. Sorry, buddy. It's time. But yeah, Spencer Steer can kind of do it all. I mean, he's not elite in really any area, but he'll hit for some average. He's got power. He'll take some walks, doesn't strike out too much, versatile. So he's somebody that we should see this year. Fingers crossed. Hopefully we see him tomorrow, but I have my doubts. And, you know, deeper in the farm system, a guy that's really caught my eye, and I haven't seen him on a ton of prospect lists yet, is Carlos Jorge, pretty recent signing out of the Dominican, I believe. Another potential kind of five-tool guy, another shortstop, you won't believe it. But
no,
you know, a guy like that can will probably slide to another position. I honestly don't know how he ranks defensively, but you know, he's got some pop, crazy speed. He's only 18 years old. He's a guy I've been kind of paying attention to, who's a little bit further off than some of these other guys that I've talked about.
I was at a wedding last week, and a guy knew that I did the show. And he was like, you know, with all these shortstops that they've gotten, maybe one of them will end up being Derek Jeter. And I was like, man, that's crazy because they can all play defense. That's a Jeter knock. Come on, guys.
Zing.
Yeah, I had to do it. I'm sorry. We have a couple of questions in here that we wanted to get to. Our good pal, Reds in Four, as always, thanks for hanging out and tuning in. Which middle infield prospect do you think makes it to Cincy first? McLean just for the versatility. Would Spencer Steer count in that because he played second base for a while?
I was assuming we weren't including that because obviously okay. I think most people probably think Steer's up by the end of the year. I would say McLean. I don't see any way De La Cruz is on the opening day roster, unless he just hits like 15 home runs in spring training and like there's absolutely, you know, no way they could keep him off. I think it's pretty much next to impossible that he's on there. I could see McClain if he comes out and has a big spring. They seem like they're moving him along. He's college bat, so he's, you know, more advanced. He's older. I don't think they're necessarily as worried about messing up McClain by rushing him versus Ellie, where they're going to be very, very careful to make sure that they're not doing anything wrong to, you know, a guy that has the chance to be a franchise altering player. They're going to make sure that it's right. And you can hate that, but they're going to do that. So yeah, I would say McClain. What about you, Matt? I mean, do you?
Yeah, I completely agree. I think it's going to be McClain. It wouldn't shock me if he's on the opening day roster next year. He's going to have to hit to do that. But it wouldn't surprise me at all. Wouldn't surprise me at all if he finishes this year in AAA, just to give him that taste and start him off right for next year. I think like you said, the swing and miss concerns with De La Cruz, you probably want him in AAA first. Take him to another level of pitching, let him see that. And I mean, if he goes and does the same thing he's doing in AA now, then sure, he'll probably be in the majors at some point next year. But I think, like you said, you want to ease him along a little bit, and let him kind of work out those kind of kinks in his plate approach first before you just throw him into major league pitching. That'll probably take advantage of his, you know, free swinging tendencies a little bit more than minor league pitching has so far.
Yeah, that was a really good point on, you know, maybe McClain getting bumped up to AAA this year. It was actually just pointed out to me. I didn't realize this, but the bat season actually goes 10 days longer AAA than AA. So Resin 4 asked a good question here. Are they keeping him for service time? I don't really think that's it. Maybe it could be one of those situations where, you know, they do want to bump McClain up and they're waiting for the right time and they're just going to do like a you know, bump at the same time type move. I could see something like that. Again, with Steer, I want him up. It's hard to see why he's not up. But, you know, this guy, he hasn't played a ton of games above AA. I think it's like 112 or something like that. So it's not crazy. And he is in a new organization. So, you know, maybe there's something more to that than we know. But I will say I would be very disappointed if we don't see him at some point. As long as he gets up here at some point, I think I'm overall good with it.
Yeah, I just hope he's not being kept down so Mike Moustakas can keep playing.
Yeah, that's what it feels like, right?
It's hard not to think that way, but I hope that's not the rationale.
I wonder if the Reds next year with him will just kind of go like full on like the Rockets did with John Wall, where they're like, look, we'll pay you, but you're sitting home and we're just kind of going to play other people, because that would be awesome. I'm totally content with that. Just pay him through the rest of his contract and play guys who deserve more at bats. So
I think Moustakas will probably have the same thing as Shogo Akiyama had, where they're going to make him go to camp. They're going to make sure they have enough, you know, guys healthy at the end of the camp. They're going to make him go all the way through that. And then they probably DFA him on, you know, the day before opening day, unless something drastically changes and the Fountain of Youth hits, which I don't really see, but you know, that would be my guess what happens with him. I don't think they're going to drag him into next year, you know, knowing they're not going to pick up his option. He has no trade value. Like, no one's going to give you, no one's even going to pay a tiny portion of his contract if he keeps doing what he's doing, which there's no evidence to suggest otherwise.
Maybe the Royals would just want to sell tickets. So, because, you know, they're a little ways away too from being competitive. So
no one brings in tickets like Moustakas. I mean,
right. You know, he had a bobblehead last year. Unfortunately, it's sitting in my basement right now. It'll probably be up in my eBay store pretty soon, though, if anyone's looking for it. That's where we're at there. I know you would. Real quick, we did hear a comment here from David Brown that said, Nick Kroll accomplished something that Dick Williams couldn't do. Kroll was allowed to do his job without Bob C. meddling with the roster.
It's hard to say. I mean, I would say that probably more than anything else. It's just more a matter of we've tried everything else type thing. And you know, maybe it you know, maybe Dick Williams was saying this all along and no one was listening to him. And, you know, they kind of needed to see with their own eyes type thing that they have to have a better farm system. I don't know. Yeah, I'm not. Matt, you got any?
I think I'd probably argue that Williams kind of got the Castellanos to stop meddling with the roster. He kind of ushered that in. And it's not that they haven't done it since he became GM, you know, several years ago. But, you know, when you think of the Billy Hamilton move, you know, to non-tender him sticks out to me. I mean, I've heard through the grapevine that the Castellanos turned down multitude of trades involving Billy Hamilton during the first rebuild, you know, because he sold tickets. People came to see him. He's fast. He's fun.
And bobbleheads.
And the bobbleheads, yeah. And to me, that was kind of a changing of the guard. In the GM's office, kind of showed me, okay, Dick Williams has a little bit of pull here. You saw him, I think he had a clear vision to kind of modernize the franchise. So I think, you know, we've started to see that the Castellanos back off a little bit during that run. It was a little too late. The rebuild was already kind of completed. The trade assets that they held on to too long were already gone. But I think Dick Williams kind of ushered that in. And fortunately, it continued this summer with Castillo and Malley and Drury and Castellini letting it crawl, do what he needed to do. I mean, the time to extend Luis Castillo was a couple of years ago. So,
yeah,
you know, we heard some 11th hour rumblings that they were trying to work out an extension. I don't think that was ever a serious thing. I think they've let go of the reins a little bit, but you see the moves that happened, you know, in the off season that were largely cost cutting. I don't think they necessarily pulled the trigger on the moves, but they, you know, they gave Kroll this budget and said, you know, hit it. So,
yeah.
They're still highly influential, but I guess I'll give them some credit for backing off and letting Kroll, you know, make the trades he needed to this time around.
Yeah, I believe Kroll was hired by Williams or promoted,
yeah,
or
right.
I don't think enough people realize how close those guys worked together. Like they were.
Kroll's been in the organization a long time.
Yeah, so I don't really think there was like this massive difference between the two of them. I just think Dick Williams, you know, said, "Yeah, I've had enough," and moved on. I don't really think it was this big gap between their philosophies and, you know, thoughts on things.
Yeah, and if I recall, Kroll was Williams' assistant GM. So,
and then I think he was actually promoted to GM, and Williams was just the president at the end. So I mean, like they were very, you know, in tandem.
Yeah, for sure.
I can't believe I didn't realize Nick Kroll's in Moneyball after listening to the Jim Day podcast. That was pretty cool. I thought that was pretty neat insight. Big time. Well, you know, just to figure the trifecta, as Hunter Green, you know, got injured, Nick Lodolas missed time. It's only fitting that Graham Ashcraft joins the roster on that right as well. So all three rookie starting pitchers who have been big parts of this team, you know, moderate success, all kind of having, you know, dealing with injuries now, as Ashcraft reported bicep soreness and he's in Cincinnati to undergo an MRI. Hunter Green, they're apparently saying, is they're hoping to make at least a handful of starts in September. Lodolov's to be pitching during the national series and has had some pretty good games since he came back from the IL. So Matt, obviously not ideal to have all three of your young guns getting injured. So that's kind of scary, but this is what we're looking at right now for the rotation for the remainder of the season. I think the best way to describe this is, huh?
That's better than anything I can come up with.
Yeah.
Mike Minor doesn't look so bad, baby.
You're looking at Nick Lodolo, Justin Dunn, Mike Minor, TJ Zuch, who didn't have a strikeout tonight and had four walks, mind you. in 2 2/3 innings. I just want to make sure I point that out. And Luis Sessa, who also went two innings the other night in his first start. So, yeah, that's it's Justin Dunn against Aaron Nola tomorrow, guys, right? You know?
I'm feeling a Reds W.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Let's do it.
Feeling better draft lottery odds.
Yeah, that's more accurate.
Yeah.
Carlos had an interesting point. I hate to give him credit, but, you know, he said, you know, these injuries seem kind of, you know, suspect or whatever. I wonder if, you know, these three guys, you know, if the Reds were in a race or anything like that, if it'd be different. You know, I'm not saying they're not real injuries, but I wonder, you know, the severity, you know, if it's kind of like, yeah, he's kind of hurting, you know what, he's about to hit his inning cap and he was just shut him down for a couple weeks. I kind of wonder on, you know, the Ashcraft and Green, you know, how much of that is true, because they are all, you know, they're going to want to cut their innings at some point. So, you know, I don't want to make too big a deal about that. Yeah. I'm not really all that worried about, you know, wins and losses the rest of the season. You know, I'm excited to see individual performances and plays and guys that we can hopefully, you know, start to count on for the future. That's far more important than wins and losses. And losses, honestly, aren't the worst thing, because they just increase your draft odds, which is, hey, help the Cubs and Astros win a World Series. So there's some value to that, too.
TJ Zuch, man, he's going to get every fifth day now.
And where is Scott Feldman when you need him? Come back, buddy. Miss you.
This is basically like, if you know, this is basically like a Scott Feldman, Eric Milton, Jimmy Haynes, you know, kind of go down the list of just great Red starters of eternity.
With Aaron Harang being the Nick Lodolo anchoring.
Yes. Yes. Right. Yeah, exactly. That's what we're looking at right now. So, pretty brutal. But yeah, like Nick said, like at this point, if you're sitting here watching every day about wins and losses, you probably just need to realize that that's not the thought process right now. And look forward to seeing who's going to contribute to the future. Which, talking about the future, we now officially know what's going on in 2023. We've got the schedule officially. So we know March 30th, we'll have opening day against the Pittsburgh Pirates, the only team in the division that has a worse record than the Reds. So, you know, I love that. Take that, Pittsburgh, and your stupid colors. And then they have, you know, opening week against the Pirates and the Cubs, the other team competing with the Reds and Pirates for third through fifth place in the Central. Some fun hopefully, interleague series.
Yeah, hopefully there's not a lockout again, because wasn't that the exact same opening week that we lost this year?
Yeah.
Wasn't it the Cubs and Pirates? So, yeah, they gave us one back. Don't have to start, you know, with the gauntlet of every playoff team.
Yeah, that's true. So then, yeah, if you look at a home interleague play, in September, you got an intra-squad game. September 4th through 6th, the Reds will be hosting the Reds at Great American Ballpark. So, you know, that'll be neat. Pretty excited to watch that. Just an intra-squad game of the Reds and former Reds basically playing against each other. So I like it.
Yeah, yeah, it'll be cool to see some teams we're not, you know, accustomed to seeing. I've always looked forward to interleague play. You know, I know some people, some older school folks out there don't love interleague play, but I enjoy getting to watch, you know, teams we don't get to watch every day, and it'll be fun to see the Seattle Redlegs come to town.
Yeah, I do love interleague play, and I know this is going to sound very old man of me. I do miss when it was like 2 weeks in the middle of the season where it was, you know, it wasn't like every night there was an interleague series. I thought that was like a lot more fun, but I'm so cool with getting, you know, the Blue Jays and the Yankees coming to town, you know, every few years now. I'll live with it. I guess they said one of the things in expansion, if they do ever expand the leagues, was that we will kind of go to having it kind of be how it used to be, with just like a one smack dab part of the middle of the season twice a year. So that's what Ken Rosenthal talked about in his podcast earlier this year. But yeah, this is kind of what you're looking at. Some trips to Get Vlad Jr. and crew in town again. You know, you get the Seattle Redlegs. Maybe if he's still on the roster, we get old Sonny Gray and Tyler Malley coming to town next year in September as well. So going to be fun. Looking forward to it. Nick, I think this is like the latest they've played the Guardians in a season.
Yeah, it's always
like forever.
It's always in May, so that's cool. That'll be exciting.
That is cool. You know,
get to go see the playoff push at the end of next year.
Yeah, for both teams.
Yeah, yeah. So, I get what you're saying, Tim, and I kind of agree. I did kind of like how special it felt. I do miss that. It's kind of like one of those things though. I feel like, you know, like it's like blockbuster nostalgia where like it's cool, but like it's not practical. I think it's great that they're playing every team every year. I love that if you know move to Texas, you know, you could see the Reds play at the Rangers every other year at least.
Sure.
Yeah. You know, so I think that's good. That's good for baseball. Chase asked a question. I know I'm definitely gonna try to go to Detroit. That's pretty close to me. I've been there once before. But I've never seen the Reds play there. So, you know, that's probably what I'll be looking at. Matt, you got any?
Yeah, I'm in Chicago now. So closer to St. Louis and Kansas City. I got a friend who lives out in Kansas City. So I may try to swing through there and catch a Royals game and I guess go watch the stupid Cardinals. But yeah, that's kind of my initial thought. Maybe I'll head up to Minneapolis at some point and see the Twins. But seen the Chicago teams, been to Milwaukee, so got to branch out a little bit now.
Yeah, Red Sox and Baltimore are two awesome, you know, stadiums to go to if you're looking to see on the road. I've been to both, so I probably won't, you know, be doing that. But those would be, if you're looking for a good one to go to, those would be awesome, awesome stadiums to go to.
Yeah, those are top of the bucket list stadiums right there.
I will not be traveling next year, unfortunately.
You can live vicariously through.
I'll live vicariously through all of you. Yeah, through all of you. So just not in the cards for me, unfortunately. But we did kind of want to get through some fun stuff here. Matt's kind of done a lot of really cool research into the Reds' current roster, the good and the bad. And we're going to kind of go through a few of these players, kind of get his thoughts. And the first one is probably the guy who you heard Chris Walsh say during the game tonight is giving the Reds the best at-bats in the roster right now. And that's Jake Fraley. And look, we've talked about since he came back from the IL, that OPS is awesome. 6 homers, a 191 weighted runs creating plus, obviously going into tonight. We know he's a flawed player with the inability to kind of hit left-handed pitching, but has been really good against right-handed pitching. Do you feel he has a chance to be a long-term outfield solution, or do you think his kind of more, I guess, glorified platoon player would be insulting to what he's done so far? But kind of where you see what Jake Fraley means to the Reds for the future.
Yeah, I would probably cut the difference and say a long-term platoon option. I don't think it's realistic to expect him to suddenly start raking against left-handers. Fortunately, most pitchers in the league are right-handed, so you're going to get him plenty of at-bats. He hit right-handed pitching well last year. He's doing it again this year post-injury. So it seems to be legit. I think at the very least he's a nice platoon corner outfielder. 27, so he's still kind of entering his prime. And hopefully by the time the Reds are ready to contend again, he'll be a nice, you know, they'll be a veteran at that point on a young, hopefully competitive Reds team. So he certainly has a role, I think, for the next couple of years. You just, you know, have to acknowledge that flaw that he can't hit lefties well.
I don't think Jesse Winker should have been anything other than a platoon player. So, like, I don't really view platoon as a negative thing. I don't understand, especially if you're a left-handed batter, why it always gets such a negative, you know, like meaning to it. But no, I mean, I love everything about Jake Fraley. You know, if you look at some of the Statcast numbers, everything looks legit. You know, the expected weighted on base average is right about online with what he's doing for the full season. That strikeout rate since he's come back down to 14.1% is really impressive. He just looks like, He looks, I mean, honestly, I think out of the current Reds position players, he's probably like, I have third on my list of guys that could still be at least in a platoon role by like 2024 behind Stevenson and India. I think he's ahead of Senzel. I think he's, you know, ahead of pretty much anyone else, you know. And so I can't be more excited about what he's been able to do. And if Jake Fraley becomes an everyday platoon player for the next, you know, 3 or 4 years, that changes everything about that the Jesse Winker Suarez trade, because he wasn't supposed to be the guy. You know, that's the two pitchers that, you know, are still in the minor league. So yeah, that really, really makes it look good. And, you know, like, Reds have control of him for like 4 more years after this. So yeah, very excited about Jake Fraley, and keep raking.
Yeah, me too, man. Really excited about what he's brought them so far. Up next, we've got Donovan Solano, who has been, you know, since coming back off the IL, has been a big breath of fresh air for the team. You know, another solid OPS, the weighted runs created plus of 129. This is entering Wednesday. Played first base tonight, so that's going to, you know, help out his availability for if he were to leave the Reds. But you had brought up some information on kind of his batting average, balls in play, and what you're kind of seeing in that situation there. So do you feel this is a guy the Reds could want to potentially bring back for the roster for next season?
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. They're going to need veterans to kind of fill in the holes as they're waiting for the prospects. You know, if Solano's willing to come back, I could see it. Probably going to have to accept a bench role. I can't see him, you know, maybe he'll continue to DH, but yeah, he's not going to start over Spencer Steer or Jonathan India. I don't think he's going to be the long-term first baseman. I don't know. One game doesn't feel like enough for me to say that. So, but yeah, I mean, he's certainly a useful piece. I think that other contenders may want him too. I mean, he's a good bench bat. So we'll see. I could see them bringing him back. You know, next year I could see him kind of pursuing other opportunities, wanting to win and not, you know, suffer through another season like this. So
sure,
I could see him having a market for sure.
Yeah, I love everything about Donovan Solano. I think he would be a perfect fit for the Reds where they're at. You know, next season, like, offer him the exact same deal again. Yeah, honestly, maybe even give him a little bit of a raise if you know, he continues into the, you know, with these numbers. Yeah, he's older, but, you know, he's probably not looking for a, you know, multi-year deal. They're not expecting it, at least. So yeah, I mean, I think he's a really good player. Yeah, I mean, sure, I think Matt said he would, I think he'd be in a bench role, but as we saw in April of this year, bench roles quickly become starting roles, and I would sure love to be Donovan Solano being the guy getting every day at bats than someone that clearly has absolutely no business, you know, being in the big league. So, yeah, I think he's a great pickup. I think it's kind of, you know, look, if the Reds weren't going to get much for him at the deadline, I have no problem keeping him. You know, I think he definitely helps and, you know, just kind of keep the team being competitive, because that does matter some, you know, as you're trying to, you know, develop good habits for, you know, great comment from Resident 4 like Barrero, you know, that helps. And, you know, it's hard to quantify, but it's not pointless.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you it's not, like you said, you can't measure it, but every team needs it. You need a veteran to kind of show the young guys the ropes and set the tone in the locker room. And Solano's already kind of stepped into that role. You see the quote here on the screen. He's talking about helping Barrero. Barrero could certainly use some help with his plate approach. I know we'll probably cover him later, but you need guys like Solano on a rebuilding team. So I have no problem if they bring him back next year. But I suspect some other teams are going to come after him too. So I think it's really going to be, the ball is going to be in his court.
Yeah, I think that's kind of what it's looking like as well. Let's look at Raver San Martin. Obviously, you know, was a guy who came in and started a little bit this year and things didn't go his way. Went into the bullpen. Didn't have his best game tonight, ending in 2/3, had one earned run on 4 hits, no strikeouts. But going into tonight, was pitching pretty well for them. Obviously, having a lefty out of the pen is always helpful for any big league club. But you know what he's been able to do, sans this evening's game in Philadelphia against a good Phillies lineup, has obviously been a really kind of like a sigh of relief for the rotating door of the bullpen this year. So you've kind of looked a little bit into him. What do you kind of take away from his emergence and his role for this team?
Yeah, I think this is the role for St. Martin in the major leagues. I don't think he has the command really to pitch as a starter. I think we saw that early in the year. His command's been a lot better since he's moved to the bullpen. And he's got good stuff. I mean, early in the season, he was leaving his changeup in the middle of the plate. His fastballs are not great. You know, he just doesn't have the velocity. Movement on his sinker is okay, but he's just not a guy that you can really count on, I think, the third time through an order. So I think this is the ideal role for him. He's very good against left-handed batters, needs to improve against righties. But, you know, we've seen in the bullpen role, his ground ball ability has really been played up. I want to say his ground ball rate's been over about 65% since he's been in the bullpen. I mean, that'll play all day long. He's never going to be a big strikeout guy, but you can get ground balls, and he's getting a lot of weak contact since he's moved to the bullpen too, which is, you know, a result of better command hitting spots. I mean, I want to say his average exit velocity is somewhere around 84-ish miles an hour, which is like Wade Miley kind of levels, to put it in context. So weak contact plus ground balls, I mean, that's generally a good combination. I mean, you know, certainly he doesn't have the stuff where if his command's off, he's going to be able to power through it. You know, we've seen a couple blow-up outings out of the bullpen, but generally he's looked a lot better, and I think should have a role moving forward, at the very least against left-handed batters.
Yeah, I certainly agree there.
Yeah, I like San Martin. You know, I'm not going to bank on him as a long-term option, but hey, he's a nice guy to have and see what you got. And, you know, certainly no one else banging down the door to take his spot right now. So, I'm just happy with he seems like such an easy guy to root for. So it's good to see him have some success. It was hard to watch earlier in the year, you know, him getting beat around in those starts. So, hey, you know, you love a guy that goes down to AAA, works on their craft and comes back up and has some success. So, yeah, very good.
You don't think that Ross Detweiler is pushing him as far as like potentially taking that role? You don't think Ross Detweiler, who's played on every major league ball club at some point in his career, is making a chance for that?
I don't think so. I would lean no.
I'm just making sure that we have the conversation at least.
I think it's a very needed conversation, so I appreciate it.
Sure, absolutely. And the last good we want to talk about, I know this is exciting for our old pal Nick Kirby, Aristides Aquino's defense. MLB outfield leaders in defensive runs saved. Aristides Aquino at 16 and had a 99 miles an hour throw, foot on the warning track tonight to the plate to Austin Romine to beat JT Realmuto at the plate. Nick, I'll bring you in here for this conversation because honestly, when are people going to learn?
I don't know. I don't know when they will learn. I mean, at least this one was like kind of crazy. Like some of the other ones, like what are you doing? You know, at least like this one almost surprised me that he threw him out even, you know, watching him. So, man, it just, like, he has 16 defensive runs saved. Probably at least going to go to 17 because he had like two saving plays today, right? And he has like a third of the innings of Kyle Tucker. Like he has like 300 something innings. Kyle Tucker has 900 something innings. Like that's ridiculous. Like I don't. It's just I said it on Twitter. So sorry if you're getting blown away with my Aquino love, but this guy OPS around 700. He's probably like a legit above average right fielder. You know, like Jason Hayward. You know, the kind of what kind of comes to mind. When you see what he does and how valuable, you know, he has 16 runs saved. That is a lot of runs saved. I mean, that's, I probably butcher the way of equating it to offense, but it's almost like 16 solo home runs, right?
Yeah, I mean, in a sense, I mean, it's why his WAR is zero. He's been terrible at the plate. Like by all accounts, he should be, you know, like a negative two WAR at this point. But he's a zero because his defense has been that good. So every time he does something like that, you just wish he could hit a little bit. And I don't think he ever will at this point, to be honest. I'm not as optimistic as Nick is about him, but hey, we can hope. I was talking in our Reds Content Plus Slack channel. Subscribe to our newsletter if you want to join. We were talking tonight about Aquino, and I said, you know, he might legitimately be a Gold Glove finalist this year.
He should.
I don't know if he actually will be, but like he might actually deserve that. He's leading all outfielders in defensive runs saved. I think he's third among NL right fielders and UZR ultimate zone rating, third and outs above average. Like, aside from the playing time, I don't see any reason he shouldn't be a Gold Glove finalist. And maybe people still are, you know, dinging players for offense, but I think we've generally gotten away from that in Gold Glove voting. So, I mean, I think he's certainly in the conversation, which is wild to think about considering he's playing what, 60 games.
Yeah, the first Gold Glove finalist that doesn't even qualify for the defensive stats.
Right.
Like if you go to FanGraphs and you select fielders and you sort by the qualified defensive run save leaders, he doesn't pop up because he doesn't have enough innings to qualify. But if you turn the qualifier down to zero, he pops up to the top. And it's a, you know, it's a quantitative number. So it's not like, you know, the more innings you play, if you're even an slightly above average, you would in theory get more. So it's just insane that he has 16 and 300 innings. That's someone's got to do some digging. You know, I don't even know how to search something like this, but you know, most defensive runs save like under 500 innings or something like that. I wonder how high up on that list, like all time he is, you know, since they started, like, I think the mid 2000s with defensive runs saved.
Yeah. It was mid 2000s, 2000, maybe 2002, I want to say. So it doesn't go back super far, but I would pretty much guarantee you he's up at the top of that list. And if you stall long enough, I can look that up in the background.
Yeah, that's a good idea, because we do have to get next to the bad in all of this, which is always a bummer, but there is. And Jonathan India obviously jumps out just because of what's going on with him. And then Zachary Ertl, friend of the program, put in the chat tonight that Bobby Nightingale tweeted while we were recording. India left the game tonight with a leg injury, saying the hit by pitch from the Fielder's Dreams games is still affecting at times, according to David Bell. And I think the general consensus is obviously the sophomore slump. You know, you look at the numbers, they're down all across the board. But this is also a guy who really hasn't played a ton this year. He's battled a lot of injuries. I'm still really high on Jonathan. I still think he's going to be a really good contributor, at least offensively, to this team. We've seen the ability or lack thereof to be a consistent everyday second baseman in the majors. I don't think that is his future or where he's going to be his most successful. We've talked about third base on this show. We've talked about Carlos. Nick has brought up the idea of first base. We've talked about quarter outfield. We've talked about strictly just being a designated hitter. I think he's going to be fine. I'm really not like freaking out about him. I just want him to stay on the field, because I feel like if he's consistently on the field, you see stuff like we saw last year. But him being consistently on the field has been the big issue this year, obviously.
Yeah, I'm willing to give him a pass on most of the offensive numbers. I mean, I think sophomore slumps are pretty normal. It happens a lot. He has had a lot of injuries. So that side of it, it is what it is. But the defense is just that. That's the most disappointing thing for me, is that, you know, you saw it last year. It was a pretty clear weakness, pretty much the only weakness in his game last year. And there's just, honestly, I don't know if I would say there hasn't been any improvement. I would say he's been worse this year. You know, two pretty rough plays tonight. So I don't know. I mean, it feels like you got to move him. Maybe the Reds know him. Maybe they'll say, hey, look, if you want to be the second baseman, you're going to have to work a lot this offseason. And, you know, we'll make a decision in camp if we're going to keep you at second base. Maybe they want to give him that sort of you know, time to, you know, give him a chance to really work on it and improve. And I don't think I'd be against that, especially with where the Reds are and, you know, probably not competing for a playoff spot next year. But it's hard to see him sticking at second base long term at this point. I don't see any way around it.
Yeah, I'm completely with you. You know, the metrics weren't great last year. The eye test wasn't much better. And like you said, I think it's been worse this year, kind of in that sporadic playing time. And, you know, I'm sure the leg injuries and everything has affected him. I believe his sprint speed still above average. You can see on the screen here, but I think his sprint speed's down. So, you know, I'm sure he's been battling that hammy all year long. Maybe just doesn't want to push it, you know, whatever it may be. But, you know, that can have an effect in the field too. I don't see any way he can stick a second base unless you're just willing to eat bad defense at a pretty important position, which I don't think the Reds should do. So it may be a move back to third base. You stick Spencer Steer at second base long term. You know, I've seen people float around left field. Somewhere he's got to go somewhere, but I don't know if second base is going to be the answer.
Yeah, he's no Pokey Reese, that's for sure. And I think, you know, like a lot of people, we had the Pardon the Punctuation guys on a couple weeks ago, right before the Field of Dreams game, and they were kind of in the argument of like, well, you know, give him time to figure it out. You've seen him make plays and stuff, like, you know, it's like, yeah, he's like have flashes, but it's strictly just because he's like an awesome athlete. Like, that's really the only thing he really has to show for second base. And I think, you know, when you're an awesome athlete, like we're seeing with him taking all these shortstops, you know, the idea is you could put those guys anywhere. And I think that's, he's going to be another person that qualifies for that conversation. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you just, the eye test, the metrics, it's just not there. And you hope he'll improve next year. It's going to have to be a pretty sizable improvement to want to stick with them long term. But like Nick said, I think, you know, this is the time to figure it out. The Reds are not going to be, you know, in a pennant race next year. So you can afford to let India kind of figure it out for a little while longer before you really think about moving him.
Yeah, I agree. And that brings us to Nick Senzel, former number two overall pick. A person that I was very high on for a long time, but I have finally cashed in before I lose any more stock on Mr. Senzel. I do say that, of course, on a night he gets on base three times with two walks, and when put at second base in an emergency, makes a really good play in the field to save a run from scoring. But other than that, you know, we saw him have like a pretty decent stretch there earlier in the season for a couple weeks where it looked like, you know, maybe things are starting to click. The power has obviously been really shocking and disappointing with his only four home runs and I think like 20 career home runs in four major league seasons. And I know a lot of that's injury, not having time to play. Matt, we talked about this for a few seconds before we got on air, but we talked a little bit about, you know, that shoulder surgery has probably, you know, really taken a lot out of what we thought Nick Senzel could be. And it seems like it's still something that really affects him. You know, it is another guy where his athleticism kind of makes him look better than he probably is in the field at times. But there's a lot of things to be concerned about. Like a 626 OPS is pretty rough and not where you want him to be.
Yeah, I mean, he's a singles hitter at this point and not a particularly great one at that, which is, you know, obviously not what any of us hoped Nick Senzel would be. And it's really hard not to wonder what could have been without that shoulder injury and then the surgery afterward. You know, we don't have any public metrics on bat speed or anything, but you kind of compare the swings and it just looks like he's lost a little bit of a touch on that. He's always been a guy that wants to see the ball deep. That's why he gets so many catcher's interference calls. I just don't know if that approach is great for him anymore. If he has lost the bat speed, like it appears, and you know, sometimes the eye test can be deceptive, but yeah, I mean, there's no power there. He doesn't really walk that much. Didn't have two walks tonight, which was good to see. There's not a lot to get excited about offensively. And I mean, he's still 26. Maybe he's just a late bloomer, but you're not seeing a lot of promising signs at the plate. Almost no power this year. I think he has 4 home runs. So, it's a bummer, and it's kind of one of the big what ifs of recent Reds prospects. And here's hoping, I'll say all this, and he, has a breakout year next year. But what we're seeing right now is definitely a bummer for Reds fans and for Senzel. He had high hopes for him, and he felt like such a safe prospect, safe draft pick, and just nothing has really worked out. And the position changes thrown in there too, didn't help him. But I think it's got to come back to that shoulder injury. I would think we've seen it derail a lot of hitters over the year. Austin Kearns is the big recent Reds example. He was never the same after the shoulder injury. So it's tough for hitters to bounce back from that.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, we were really hoping that, this could be the year. And we always thought if he just stayed healthy, he'd produce. And he's actually, had a, knock on wood, pretty clean bill of health for him this year. It hasn't happened. So a comment, needs to be DFA this offseason. I mean, I don't think you're at that point. But I think if he doesn't pick it up by next year and at least solidify himself as a legit platoon player, he's going to start to get pretty expensive, because center fielders, even the ones that don't hit, they start getting paid. And he's at least probably an average, I think last time I checked, he was -1 outs above average, which for a center fielder, that's pretty good. You can't just, throw anyone in center field. So he'll start getting expensive. And I think next year the Reds might have an interesting situation with him. So kind of really good question here. Does he have options? Yeah. I mean, he does have options. I mean, I guess you could, I don't know. I mean, there was another good question in here, about Friedel. Maybe not this year, but could it maybe, let TJ Friedel push him a little bit, send him down for a little bit. I mean, I'm open to I guess really anything at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I think you bring him back next year. Maybe you consider a non-tender this offseason, but who is in the outfield pipeline ready to go next year? You're gonna have to fill up some innings. And Senzel, health willing, can do that at least, and hopefully he. It kind of becomes that late bloomer and can figure things out next year. But I certainly have my doubts, as most of our commenters do here too. So, but I do think he's back next year. You need somebody to play the outfield.
Yeah. I'm as excited about Jay Allen as anyone, but I don't think he's there. He just got promoted to Dayton. So let's not worry about moving Senzel to where we're kind of going with him. So we'll see. Then of course, go ahead, Nick. I'm sorry.
Oh, no. Zachary had said earlier about, do we think he gets the bulk of starts at center field next year? I think he'll be back, but I think they're going to have someone there that's at least pushing, whether it's Friedel, maybe it's Matt McClain. Maybe is they try him in center field in spring training. But I definitely think there'll probably be someone that's going to be pushing him. And I guess you've seen him, moving around. He definitely doesn't have the bat to play third base every day or second base every day, but he, like we talked about with Donovan Solano being, he's better than, probably your, 4A fill-in guy. So maybe that's how he has to provide any value, is by playing multiple positions. But
Nick Zobrist, we got to get the trend back, Nick.
Yeah.
Michael Cianni's a guy who's getting a lot of love right now.
Yeah, he's.
I mean, the man can field. Just having seen him a couple of years ago in Dayton when I lived in town, the kid can go get it. If he can provide you anything at the plate. I mean, he's a fourth outfielder probably, but he's a big league defender right now. You could certainly see him next year.
Yeah, he's a lot of fun to watch. but he does have a 97 weighted runs created plus at AA right now. So
that's the rub.
Is he really better than Nixon Zell? Yeah, I don't know. I mean, maybe his defense outweighs, but 97 weighted runs created at AA probably is like a 65 in the big leagues. You know, it's I don't know.
Yeah, you're looking at a kind of an Aquino situation there.
I got another one. Perfect. Great. Grand. Nick's so excited. All right, that brings us our final of the bad is to have a conversation about is Jose Barrero. Interesting note that with his strikeout tonight, he has struck out in every major league game he has played this season. All 19 games, he has at least one strikeout in those games. You know, he looks a little helpless still. This is a guy who's kind of obviously, I know he's been up and down, and he was definitely not ready when he came up in 2020 for that shortened season. I thought our conversation we had with John Sadak about him was awesome. And John gave a lot of really good insight to, you know, this is a guy who's been through hell and back. And so kind of seeing everything going on now and kind of seeing him kind of go through these motions has been difficult. But this is a guy who's gone through a lot in life. But man, like, you know, every pitcher now knows you throw the breaking ball low and away and he's going to chase it. And, you know, when you like he does lay off one, you're like, oh, hey, cool. That was an improvement, even though it probably wasn't much of an improvement. So I would like to say, he's going to figure this out. It's going to be OK. But this is his third glimpse in the majors and we're still having the same conversation we had in 2020.
Yeah, I mean, there's no sugarcoating it. He's looked pretty bad at the plate since he's come up, which wasn't that surprising. He didn't perform in Louisville either. I think the caveat this year is he had that wrist injury, that hand made injury. It can take a while to bounce back from that, from any sort of hand or wrist injury as a batter. It can affect your bat speed. And you're seeing, you know, in addition to those sliders low and away, he's swinging and missing through a lot of fastballs over the plate too. So you wonder if he's still battling some effects of that hand injury and surgery, just still kind of working his way back from that. But there's no doubt the plate approach has to improve dramatically. You can't strike out 50% of your bats, or even 40% of your bats, even 30% of your bats. 30% is probably the high end of where you can be and still be successful. He's got to cut that down dramatically. But, you know, we've seen him perform in AAA as recently as last year. So, you know, there's still that the talent's there somewhere. If he can find it again after the hand injury, he shows some pretty good flashes defensively. He's got some pop, but he's got to improve his pitch selection and just be more patient. His swing rate is higher than any other player in baseball with as many plate appearances. It's a lot. He's swinging 60% of the time, which is, you know, beyond like Javi Baez levels of aggressive at the plate. So he's got to rein that in. He's got to get the swing and miss under control. And hopefully as he gets further removed from the wrist injury, he will. But and there's no sugarcoating. He's not looked good at the plate.
Yeah, I just keep telling myself, you know, it feels like he has a lot more, but he only has 69 nice plate appearances this year. He only had 56 last year. So, I mean, he's still very in his infancy big league stage. I hope, you know, 2021, he had a 9% walk rate at AA, 2021, a 10% walk rate at AAA. You know, this year he's like down below three. So I think if we could just draw a few more walks, I think that will, you know, hopefully help some of it. You know, hopefully just one of these things that, you know, you start getting on base and it snowballs, you know, where you see like Jonathan India, you know, is kind of maybe in, you know, like it's not gonna be Jonathan India, but Jonathan India wasn't like the super high on base guy in the minors. And he just kind of started getting rolling, you know, at the big league level where he started getting on base and it started happening for him. So you kind of hope that with Barrero, he's got the rest of this season, which is good. You know, hopefully, you know, we can see some glimpses. I think he'll have every opportunity to be the opening day shortstop next season. So look, Jose, this is your chance, man. You know, there's a whole bunch of guys behind you that want that shortstop job. You know, it's yours, and you'll just have to, you know, we'll have to see if he can take it and run with it. But
yeah, and like you said, he didn't strike out at this level in previous years. He's not even touched 30% in the minor leagues until the wrist injury. So that gives me some hope that, you know, this is a bad year. He's coming off a bad injury that can really affect a hitter. So that's my hope. I think that's all of our hopes. You know, this level of swing and miss is new for him. So you hope it's tied back to the injury and he can kind of get rolling this last month here and roll that into 2023.
Yeah, I think that's what we can all hope for sure. So one real quick before we get out of here, Nick and our good friend Clay Snowden did a really cool special that came out on Sunday, kind of discussing what the 2024 Reds could look like as far as, you know, what's currently in-house now. And it was a really cool conversation. They kind of talk about some guys will be free agents at the time that could really match what the Reds are looking for as from a player at that time as well. Please go check it out if you have a chance. It's definitely worth the time as far as a good thing piece. But Matt, when you look at this, kind of how they have things laid out, just quick scan real quick. Is there anything that jumps out to you? Anything you might disagree with that you might see kind of go another position? How do you feel when you kind of look at this group of men on the screen here?
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of exciting young talent here. And you certainly can see a good team here if all these guys develop. And, you know, there's going to be probably a couple who don't pan out. But this has the makings of a good core if they continue to develop. Obviously, they're going to want to probably supplement from the outside. But if we're just sticking to players currently in the organization, I think you have a good core to build around here. My only qualm would probably be taking Nick Senzel out of center field. Sorry to pile on you there, Nick, but I have a hard time seeing him still being in center field 2024, at least as the starter. He can definitely kind of be filling that utility role that we talked about. But is that Jonathan India at DH?
Yeah, yeah. On our show, we talked a little bit more, and neither me and Clay both had our own depth charts, and neither one of us had Senzel as the starting center field. No, actually, I did. Clay didn't, but I was kind of like very hesitant. I just, like, based on who's in the organization, I didn't really have anyone else that I felt like I could stick there as something in 2024. But yeah, I definitely don't think it's likely he's there. And then India, my caveat with India was, maybe he's like more of like a Max Muncy type where like they play him a little bit at second, a little bit at first, a little bit at DH, kind of a little bit of everything. I could maybe see that, but this is, again, without any free agents. There's obviously going to be free agents. The Reds are going to have a lot of money to spend in 2024. So I guess, Matt, my biggest question for you, what do you think the biggest, you know, weakness is? A lot of these guys aren't going to pan out. This is not going to, if the Reds had half these guys pan out, they did well. What do you think is the kind of the biggest weakness of the team?
Of the team on the screen, I think it's the outfield, you know, and not to harp on Nick Senzel, but I don't think he'll be there.
But
Fraley, I think has every chance in the world to be on that team and be a contributor. You know, Serda is kind of an Adam Dunn type, three true outcomes type. Could kind of see him going either way. Light tower power, he can draw a walk. Strikes out a ton, so he'll be interesting to watch. He's struggled a little bit in Double A, so we'll see there. I think if he develops, that's a nice platoon right there. But that's a question mark to me. I think Matt McClain will be solid. I could definitely see him, you know, moving out there to the outfield. Center field, I think, is a possibility for him. He played there at UCLA, so you could see him kind of slide into that role over Senzel. And then, you know, you kind of have a hole there in left field. So I think looking at this, the outfield is what sticks out to me. And then you have Ciani on the bench there. Talked about him a little bit. great defender, very iffy bat. He's going to have to progress a lot to be a productive bat in the big leagues. So as things stand here, I'd say the outfield is a big question mark to me.
We touched on it a little bit, but the big thing that everyone's been talking about is how many pitchers that the Reds have and how loaded they are. I think they have a lot of really good pitching, but I don't think they have five 2024 starters right now. I don't know who are going to all pan out. I have my guesses, but you know, just the pitchers, it's really hard to predict. How many starters do you think that the Reds will need in 2024 from the outside?
After this year, as many as possible.
you know, assuming health, like if you're trying to pencil a 1 through 5, how many guys do you think would be legit big league starters?
Yeah, I mean, I think your top three there is rock solid, and I think trying to project pitchers like Williamson and Abbott right now is hard. You know, the double A is tough. We're seeing Abbott kind of go through those speed bumps right now. Same with Williamson. Sorry, no Justin Dunn. He was the first one out. So if any of these guys gets hurt, Justin Dunn, it's a lot of men. But yeah, pitchers are very hard to project. You know, we're seeing Williamson and Abbott both go through their struggles right now. After Abbott dominated at the beginning of the season, Williamson dominated last year. So it's very hard to say they're for sure going to be in the 2024 rotation. So I think you want 2, 3, 4, 5 decent kind of options and ready in the upper minor leagues to step in if this doesn't pan out. Connor Phillips comes to mind. I think he could easily slide in above either Williamson or Abbott. And, you know, there's a handful of other guys lower down in the system right now who could certainly threaten to make the 2024 rotation if they keep developing. So I think you have a solid top three there. You hope that Lodolo or Green kind of develops into that next ace, the next Luis Castillo, and the other guy can kind of be the you know, the one A and one B ace, kind of like a Castillo Sonny Gray situation. But you're definitely projecting a lot with pitchers, and you hope that Williamson and Abbott turn out, but it's tough to project with injuries and just you know, we're seeing them go through their struggles now after previously dominating in the minors. So it's tough. Pitching's hard.
Yeah, Phillips was our first guy out, you know, so we said he's just as likely probably as Abbott or Williamson. Just we had them, they're probably ahead of them right now. Vlad Gutierrez, I mean, I think his probably only chance, I mean, I think he's probably right now a depth piece, but I think he's probably his only chance of, like, not getting non-tendered at some point would be to carve out a bullpen role. I don't see him locking down a starting role. If he does, great. And then the other wild card is Connor Overton. I'm interested to see if he does make some more starts this year. Hopefully he does. Certainly would, you know, beat our guy TJ today. He's had some interesting numbers the last 2 years that I'd like to see a little bit more. He probably doesn't factor in, but, you know, in a lost year, hey, why not, you know, see if maybe he's found some magic there.
Yeah. And I don't think anyone wants to talk about innings eaters with the Mike Minor situation, but you know, Overton could certainly be that next year. He's like you said, he's a guy. I stare at his Fangraphs page and I'm like, how is he doing this? I don't understand, but he kept churning out good start after good start. And that was a very welcome sight early in the year when none of the Red starters were going deep into any games. So I think he can certainly factor in next year, if nothing else, than to eat some innings.
And when no one else could throw strikes, he could actually throw some strikes.
Yeah,
that was the most encouraging thing.
Yeah, for sure. All right, so this is what we have coming up on the schedule. Oof, I know everyone's super stoked about this rotation.
Lodolo!
Lodolo on Sunday against Patrick Corbin. You have Justin Dunn against Aaron Nola on Thursday. Mike Minor against Major League debut Cade Cavalli of the Nationals. Luis Sessa going against Paolo Espino. And like I said, Lodolo against Patrick Corbin on Sunday. And the Reds come home with TJ Zuch on Monday against Miles Mikolas, Justin Dunn against Dakota Hudson, and Mike Minor against Jack Flaherty. Excuse me. Sorry, I had to sneeze for a second. That was the worst opportunity for that to pop in. Thanks a lot, body. And then off Thursday for a Friday game where Luis Sessa is scheduled to take the mound against Kyle Freeland if everything goes as planned.
I'm excited to see Dunn a little bit more. I mean, excited is probably not a word like most people use, but at this point, you know, whatever. I'm interested. Maybe that's a better way. I'm interested in seeing Dunn pitch a little bit more. And then obviously Lodolo, excited about him. You know, the other are games that will be played.
I doubt Zoic makes that start. I don't see how you can run him out there again.
I hope it's Williamson, man. I don't fault the Reds for not calling up Williamson because he's not killing it at AAA. Like, let me preface that, but he certainly is better than Zoic. I feel bad like for the guy. I don't want to harp on him. You know, he's following his dream, but
yeah, he's getting that big league pay though. So
yeah,
that's right.
Yeah, I would like to see Brandon Williamson. He did have a pretty solid start. Numbers didn't look as great. It kind of was a weird line at the end, but I've watched his last couple start, tried to really kind of hone in. You definitely see some potential there. He'll like have like these really bad innings where he has really bad command, but then he kind of gets through it and he's fine. And so that's probably what they're worried about is, you know, he's going to come up and he's going to not get out of the first inning. But at some point, I guess you're just going to have to see what happens, right?
Yeah, I think at this point you gotta throw him into it. I was kind of in the same boat as you. Yeah, you saw the strikeout rate kind of plummet this year. Walk rate went the wrong direction. You know, he's probably not ready, but he's a better option than TJ Zoic at this point. And hopefully he can kind of come up and learn and close out the year in the Reds rotation and hopefully take that in next year and get that command back to 2021 levels.
Yeah, it's all we can hope for at this point, for sure. Well, before we also want to make sure we show this up real quick. This is what we have kind of after the Rockies. September, not a whole lot of home games, but hey, look at that. Another doubleheader with the Pirates and randomly in the middle of the week on Tuesday. On Tuesday, September 13th. So that's kind of fascinating. And then you got the Red Sox, the Brewers. The season's coming to a close very quickly. So you guys think they end up losing those 100 games? You think that happens here? They're at 75?
A lot of games.
The rotation the rest of the year, probably. But if you get Green and Ashcraft back, I think there's a shot they avoid it.
Yeah, right now they're at 97.1 on Fangraphs. So they have a 3-game cushion. I mean, again, someone has to win those Reds and Pirates games, and the Cubs aren't very good either right now. So, I mean, they're
also true.
And they got 3 against the Nationals this weekend, who are also very, very bad. They have a worse record than the Reds. So, yeah, I mean, like Matt said, I mean, if they keep running out those 5 or something very similar to that, yeah, it probably starts getting dicey at the end. But assuming Green and Ashcraft make, you know, I don't know, 3 more starts each, I think they probably avoid 100. But it might be down to the last weekend.
Yeah, it might be close. We might be cutting it. Man.
It's going to be super weird. Super weird on the last day of the season. The Reds are at 99 losses. And we don't want the Reds to lose 100 games, but they're like 1 game out of the 3rd worst record, which that gives you the highest odds of the draft pick. It's going to be some real mental gymnastics in my head.
Yeah, you're not kidding. Whew, gonna be fun to do the show that week. All right, with that being said, this has been a lot of fun tonight, kind of going through everything. Always appreciate Matt coming and hanging out. We got to have you on more than just, you know, it's only the second time I've had you on, like we said. But before we get out of here, like we said earlier, please, please, please take just a couple seconds, to give us a follow on, give us a subscription on YouTube. Nick Kirby, Late Night Reds Talk is the channel. It goes a long way for us to kind of grow the show. If you do get, you know, a few seconds, give, go to your podcast subscription to application of choice. Give us a solid 5-star review. It goes a long way for us to beat the algorithm to kind of get our name out there. And I will plug this again. We haven't plugged in a little while, but it is still out there. If you want to support the show because you're a big fan of us, and, you know, obviously, I mean, who else would you listen to? LateNightReds.merchmake.com, where you can get some Late Night Reds gear, T-shirts, sweatshirts, hoodies, joggers, dog bandanas, mugs, coasters. You name it, we have it there at the LateNightRedsTalk.merchmake.com. So thank you all again. Thanks again, Matt, for hanging out with us. But have a good night, everyone, and we will see you soon.
Start clean with Clorox, because Clorox delivers a powerful clean every time. Because messes happen. Because... I have a charcoal mask! Great, because why would I put that on my face when I could drop it in my sink? This is what I get for multitasking. Ugh, why is charcoal so sticky?
Hello?
Hey, Janice. I am so sorry. I thought I was on mute. No, we don't need to reschedule. I'll just stay off camera. Ooh, yeah, that happens. So start clean with Clorox. Use Clorox products as directed.
At Amica Insurance, we know it's more than a life policy. It's about the promise and the responsibility that comes with being a new parent. Being there day and night. And building a plan for tomorrow, today. For the ones you'll always look out for, trust Amica Life Insurance. Amica. Empathy is our best policy.